The truth is that we are in a climate emergency. We have less than 10 years to make substantial changes to our society and way of life and our economy.
I want to stress from the outset that this pandemic is far from over.
Those who have never fought for the colours they fly should be careful about criticising those who have.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts. When Sajid Javid took over as health secretary, he said officials warned him that the NHS waiting list, currently at 5 million, could perhaps reach 13 million people. Well, this week, the government published its winter plan for booster shots, continued testing and tracing, and self-isolation for those with the virus.
We have prepared a plan B of a contingency measures that we can call upon only if they are needed and supported by the data, to prevent unsustainable pressure on the NHS.
Well, in today's special programme, we're taking a deep dive into the future of the National Health Service as it faces the most challenging period in its 73-year history. Against the backdrop of those rising waiting lists, we'll assess the present state of the NHS and look at how it's facing up to another challenging winter. And we'll broaden it out and ask what we want the health service to look like after the current crisis. Well, let's get to our first guest today. John Restall is Chief Executive of Managers in Partnership. MIP is the union for senior staff working in the NHS and care services. John, thanks so much for joining us today on Bloomberg Westminster. You speak to people running hospitals every day. Give us an overview of how things are in the NHS at the moment.
Well, thanks very much for having me on, Ewan. I suppose the big message from them all is the NHS is by no means anywhere close to being back to normal, in quotes. I think the public, have started to see the easing of lockdown as a sign that life is starting to go back to normal. We're starting to see, obviously, the huge impact that the vaccination program has had. But for the NHS, we're still right in the middle of the pandemic. And I think, the Secretary of State announced a winter plan for a lot of services, including the ambulance service. It feels like winter already and has done in the middle of summer. So that the levels of activity in some cases are being described by some of my members as unprecedented. And with that, you've obviously got the demands for getting back to the backlog of people waiting to be seen by the service, excluded from those services because of the initial phase of the pandemic. So it feels unprecedented. I think for most staff, they've shown amazing resilience in the last 18 months. I mean, truly amazing efforts to do what they've done. But I think even with a few breaks this summer, most people are knackered. So I think there is a sense of a service that has coped, is about to cope, but could easily be tipped, particularly if a third wave over winter really unbalances things. So it feels for most people like we're still very much in the midst of a crisis, even though maybe the wider public feel things are moving on.
Has that crisis mood, been continuous over the last 18 months? Because in other aspects of our lives, it's felt like there have been long periods of normality. What's it been like in the NHS? Have there been periods of normality, or has it really been in crisis mode the whole time?
I think it's been, crisis is often an overused word, isn't it? I think it's been under relentless pressure throughout. I think there are, if you just think about the normal NHS, it was already struggling with staffing shortages. We already had significant demand building up across a wide range of services, including mental health and in primary care. And, the big funding splashes of the past had begun to slow. So demand was, so that was before the pandemic. And then, of course, the pandemic comes along. You have the impact of handling the thousands of people who needed hospital care. Subsequently, the vaccination program, which is a massive success story and has been partly delivered by a sort of extra workforce, has nonetheless been a massive focus for managers and clinical staff. So although it feels at moments things have gone up and down as we, the public, have been in and out of lockdown, had restrictions lifted or reimposed, for the NHS it's been building all the time. But I, you know, it is building on the on a service that already had some major challenges and weaknesses before we went into the pandemic. So I think that all adds up to what, you know, some of my members would say this winter could be a perfect storm or sort of a final straw for some people. And I think at the heart of all of this, of course, is, you know, where are staff and how do they, you know, keep going? How do we get more staff in? And you don't just magic up staff in healthcare. You have to train and carefully regulate people into the workforce. So, you know, government funding announcements aren't necessarily the limiting factor here. It is staffing. That's the thing that's going to make life ever more difficult for managers and clinical teams on the front line.
And how is the health service gearing up for winter? We've had pleasant weather at the moment. Many people are not thinking winter's around the corner, but it will come soon enough. And it's always a difficult time for the NHS. We hear about that every winter, but how is it gearing up for this one?
Well, I think it's obviously, it's doing the normal winter planning. And in a sense, there is a reasonably tried and tested sort of emergency planning system in the service. And I think speaking to the managers around the country, you know, in rural and urban areas this week, I think they definitely feel that they are in a position to at least forecast what's going to happen and try and put in place the relevant mitigations, work out where demand's likely to hit and so on. But they're doing it against this backdrop of what happens if a COVID or some other sort of change in, you know, the viral landscape comes along. So if, you know, normal flu is often a huge drop of pressure on the service. So it feels, I suppose, precarious, but they are using sort of tried and tested planning. It is really how far the service can be pushed over the winter months if things that we can't quite see, which, let's face it, has been the last 2 years, come into view. I think allied to it, and this is a really big political issue, is how far the government wants to push a service that is managing the emergency pressures into dealing with that big backlog of waiting times. Because I think that, you know, those two things taken together, you know, really make you know, the big difference in terms of how well prepared the NHS is. So if you're a manager of a huge range of services, you're worrying about, you know, COVID and how you manage emergency admissions, you're worrying about your waiting list, and of course you're worrying about things like, you know, the booster program, getting the next range of vaccination done and so on. So it's really a thin layer of management, very stretched clinical teams, having to potentially deal with too many plates spinning over the winter months. And, you know, that's really where the big sort of crisis fears lies, the number of issues we're trying to deal with rather than just winter.
Mm. We know that a lot of elective care has just been put to one side, and I think people appreciate that for less serious things, that is not getting done. But tell us about outcomes for serious health conditions, things like cancer. Is the NHS performing well on those again?
Well, I think it's clearly any outcome measures are going to be under intense pressure. I think, you know, we saw such a massive drop off of people presenting for what would normally have led to early diagnosis of, you know, of cancer and other treatments. And I think, I mean, there'd be better place people to talk about the actual outcomes that we're seeing sort of internationally or in terms of the sort of the acuity of these things and how treatable they are. But I think what managers are telling me where they're working, particularly in medical divisions, is there will be a tension coming from, you know, the government and the centre to get the overall number of people waiting to be seen down, which may not be the same as dealing with the most urgent cases and the most serious, you know, clinical risk cases. And again, I think government's going to need to be really careful about how it focuses the efforts of managers in particular and their clinical colleagues on which are the priorities. If it's numbers, then that would suggest there's a pressure to get less serious but high volume kinds of cases through the system, so the numbers overall waiting reduce. If it's clinical, then you might well be dealing with fewer people but who have more serious risk. I think we need a debate, really, with the public about what their priorities are. I think most of us would say that it is the, you know, it is the serious cases that we wish to to see prioritised by the service, but it's, you know, it, those big numbers are going to become big political facts in the next couple of years, and waiting lists are not going to go back to anything like pre-pandemic for years to come. So it's going to be around at the time of the next election.
Yeah, on the subject of big numbers, you mentioned the big funding splashes are beginning to slow. £60 billion was the extra amount of cash for COVID last year. That's going to be a lot less over the coming year. Talk to us about the money and your concerns over that.
Well, I think, I mean, there's two ways of, I mean, obviously you need money. I mean, in some senses, money has always been the lifeblood of the NHS, and you can have, you know, great services, but if there's no capacity, you know, they don't get around enough people. I think more, almost as important as the money, is some degree of longer term certainty about how that money is going to flow and what the expectations are going to be. So I think most people, if you're a middle manager in particular, you'd like to make a 2 to 3 year plan for your service. It's really hard to do so when you've got really short-term funding streams, short-term decisions, particularly around winter. You want a winter plan that's actually 3 or 5 years long, not just for this coming winter. And that, it critically allows you to start thinking about, are there better ways of organising services? Can you get staff working more effectively across the system? Can you partner with other organisations better? And that's more of this long-term planning. So that ultimately, that's where you'll get the long-term benefits of the public, is if we can manage the resource better. So I think the plea is, yes, give us more money, but give us some long-term planning as well, so that the money announced is something we can then work on and rely on for, say, 3 to 5 years. That will be vital for staffing.
Well, as we gear up for a second winter living with COVID, where do we go from here? Let's talk about the way forward with the Director of Policy for the NHS Confederation, Dr. Leila McKay. The NHS Confederation brings together and speaks for the whole healthcare system in England, Wales and Northern Ireland. Leila, thanks so much for joining us today. How has the NHS stood up so far to the challenges of the current crisis?
The NHS has done incredibly well meeting the challenges of COVID-19. But what we're seeing now in this next phase is the repercussions of these huge efforts that have been made over the past months to manage COVID-19. So here we are now, the people are receiving the care they need for COVID-19. The vaccination programme is going incredibly well. But what we're also seeing is that in order to make these great achievements, we are seeing an increased number of people on the waiting lists. We are seeing a very high level of demand, particularly in urgent and emergency care, including primary care, but across the whole system. And we're seeing a workforce who has been working intensively for months on end without much respite. We're trying to deliver all the care that they usually would, and realising that this summer there wasn't that reduction in demand that is often seen. In fact, we hear from the ambulance service that they're receiving the highest demand ever on record. And frankly, the system is running under incredible pressure right now, which is obviously concerning as we move towards winter with an unknown around what COVID-19 might look like at that time.
How far are hospitals still in firefighting mode? Are they managing to deal with any of the everyday health issues, the smaller things that people present with?
Absolutely. Hospitals and indeed the whole health service are working really hard to deliver that care, help all those people who need the urgent care, to make really significant inroads into the backlog of elective care. They're making huge amounts of progress, but the challenge is that they're doing it alongside the reductions in capacity that are caused by COVID-19 and by the increased demand that is created by people with COVID-19 and the various adjustments that need to be made because of the pandemic. As well as that, lots of people who didn't seek care during the pandemic are now quite rightly coming forward to get the care that they need. And all of that is certainly building up in a way that makes people feel quite concerned as they look towards winter.
Is progress being made? Because that waiting list is very much going up, isn't it? It isn't coming down.
Well, there were some figures released recently that said, for example, that in June and July, there were 3.9 million diagnostic tests, 2.6 million people started consultant-led treatment. That is up very much so on last year. In June and July, nearly 500,000 people were checked for cancer and nearly 50,000 started treatment for cancer. That's a 32% increase year on year. So I think that that's a good demonstration of how very much so the NHS is working incredibly hard, not just on COVID, but on all the other things that people look to their NHS for. We also look to the figures, for example, of who's going to A&E. That's 1.34 million people. And that's up on pre-pandemic attendance. So there is a huge amount of activity going on in the NHS right now.
Yes, a massive pressures on the system. The NHS is to receive about £30 billion over the next 3 years from the government's recently announced tax rise. Give us an idea of the sort of planning that will go into spending that kind of extra money.
Absolutely. Well, an important amount is, of course, going on reducing that elective backlog. We know that there are a very large number of people who are waiting for their treatment. So a really substantial amount is going into the various ways in which we can expand capacity and get those people the treatment as soon as they need it. In addition to that, there are all sorts of other investments that need to be done. For example, to make sure that there is sufficient workforce to be able to deliver all the care that is needed. There are investments across the system in how to work more effectively, more efficiently, in all sorts of ways to make sure that we're able to deliver this modern health system in this new COVID era. And certainly there are, in some ways, the money has been specifically identified of what is needed for it. In other ways, that is still being worked through at the moment. But there is a huge amount of strategic thinking to make sure that every pound is spent in the most efficient way possible to get people the care that they need.
Our last guest told us that staffing, unsurprisingly, is key to delivering better services. How does the NHS go about increasing productivity from staff?
Yeah, that is exactly right. And we need to remember, of course, that these staff members have been working so hard that in some ways, you know, there's the opportunity to increase the hours, increase the amount of time that those people are working. And that is one way to increase the capacity. But at the same time, those are the people who've been working so hard. They need to have some respite. They need to have some rest. So there's other things that need to be thought about in terms of recruiting more people, in terms of increasing efficiencies and working in different effective ways to try to improve what we can do with the staff we have. But certainly there are really significant vacancies right now. There's also ongoing staff sickness right now, and it is a really difficult challenge to be able to make sure that that there are enough staff. And this has been a challenge, of course, for many years. But what we're seeing now is that COVID-19 has exacerbated that challenge.
Looking at some of the wider policy issues, the government's Health and Care Bill, the first major bit of legislation on this subject for about 9 years or so, the government says it wants to move away from competitive tendering and outsourcing reforms brought in under Andrew Lansley. Do you welcome that change?
At the end of the day, working together as a system to help improve the health of the population is an approach that just makes good sense. It's how many people in the NHS want to work, and our members tell us that they support this move. It will hopefully deliver more efficiency, it will deliver more effectiveness, but at the end of the day, the proof is in the pudding. It will hopefully deliver better population health.
Would it be fair to say on that subject that the NHS has a problem with integration, that the different parts of the enormous system not really working very well together? What can we do to address that?
Well, the new legislation that's coming through is very much seeking to address that. Everyone is very keen to, everybody is very keen to make sure that we all work together for the benefits of patients, of the population. But I guess the way that things have worked in the past have led to people working in a more siloed way. So, for example, you know, primary care or acute care or social care, all of those different bodies working not quite as closely together as could be possible. So really what I think we believe is that if we can bring all these different parts of the system, mental health care, et cetera, all working together and facing in the same direction and collaborating in really effective ways, then that will be really beneficial. But in order to do that effectively, changes to the legislation are actually needed, which is what is going on right now in Parliament.
And what about preventative care? That's something that government has talked about as a priority for many years, but it never really seems to get properly addressed.
Yeah, I think that the pandemic has very much shone a light on the importance of prevention and on the impact of health disparities. We see, you know, across the country that people of different socioeconomic classes, people of different ethnicities, people of all sorts of different types of diversity are impacted differently from the pandemic. And I think that that's really shone a light on why that is and how do we actually reduce those health inequalities so that if a pandemic comes, it's not hitting people in this very unfair way where some are affected more than others. That has really focused, I think, the government's mind. It certainly focused the mind of the NHS and these new integrated care systems. A real objective is going to be reducing health inequalities. And one of the key ways that you do that is by improving population health, preventing preventable diseases. So it's going to be really important to invest in that area.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.